Hi, you're listening to Impact, Diálogos, a podcast on Brazilian contemporary politics, populism, and conspiracy theory. I am Caterina Hadzikidi, and I'm your host. In this episode, I speak with Letícia Duarte. Letícia is a Brazilian journalist based in New York. She is a Global Reporting Fellow with the Ground Truth Project and a Global Migration Project Reporting Fellow at Columbia Journalism School. Recipient of the 2019 Harper's Magazine Scholarship and of several awards, Letícia is also the author of the book Vaza Jato, Os Bastidores das Reportagens que Sacudiram o Brasil, which we can roughly translate as Vaza Jato, Behind the News Stories That Shook Up Brazil. She contributes to several major journals and magazines, including The New Yorker and Revista Piauí. In this episode of Impact, Diálogos, Letícia will speak about Bolsonarism's guru, the writer and self-proclaimed philosopher Olavo de Carvalho, whom Letícia has described as the architect of Bolsonaro's far-right vision. Olavo de Carvalho is commonly described in negative terms by what he stands against: an anti-communist, anti-intellectualist, anti-science, anti-politically correct, and so on. I ask Letícia to begin by sketching a first image of Olavo for someone who is unfamiliar with him and to explain why he's considered a relevant figure for those who want to better understand contemporary Brazilian politics.
I would say Olavo is the intellectual architect of Brazil's far right. So he's a self-taught philosopher, and he has created this new generation of Brazilians on the far right, conservative leaders. And ultimately, he helped Bolsonaro get elected. So Olavo is a really important figure. He's described by Brazilian media as the Bolsonaro's guru. He's often compared to Steve Bannon for his influence in the government. But Olavo is a little different. He has no official relation with the government. He really operates on the internet, just the social media. He has now more than a million followers on YouTube and Facebook. And he uses his channels to spread right-wing revisionism, right-wing ideology. And he's influential in the government, even like indicating ministers, shaping Brazil's politics. And one special characteristic is that Olavo is really aggressive.
Political scientist Zeynep Gambetti has argued that the alt-right has read Gramsci well enough to know how hegemonic struggle is to be waged. I ask Letícia if she considers this assertion relevant for the Brazilian case.
Yeah, this is totally truth. We can say that Olavo, for example, he quotes often Gramsci. His strategy on creating this new course on philosophy to educate new far-right leaders is basically an answer to Gramsci's strategy, because he says often, he talks about the culture war, and he says the right needs to fight back, because Gramsci has taught that people should fight not with tanks, not with weapons, but with minds, educating people with ideas. And Olavo, basically, he uses all these concepts in trying to make the war in favor of the right. And he has been successful in this strategy. And it's interesting, really interesting to see how he uses this originally leftist ideas to form this new generation. And often Olavo says that the left was winning this cultural war since the 1960s. We had this military dictatorship for 21 years in Brazil. And Olavo said when he started organizing his programs to teach this new generation of leaders, he was thinking that the left was winning for too long and he needed to do something to change the game and to fight back the left. So that's really the origin when he started to do his teachings.
Olavo has a particularly polemical stance on professional journalism, and Leticia had a first-hand experience of a staged verbal onslaught by Olavo at his house in Petersburg, Virginia, US. So I asked her if she could tell us a bit about Olavo's trajectory as a journalist and about his quest for alternative media outlets where he could express his opinions freely. You may remember from the episode with political scientist Camila Rocha that from the early 2000s onwards, several online conservative groups were created as a result of a search for spaces to exchange ideas outside of the political mainstream, which many saw as hostile. So I asked Leticia about Olavo's role in pioneering and steering an alternative conservative public sphere, which would eventually bypass the professional press.
Yeah, this is super interesting because Olavo has a very particular trajectory. Even before being a journalist, he was an astrologist. And even before being an astrologist, he was a communist. So he basically turned against all his previous experiences in life and professional. And as a journalist, he has worked many years as a journalist, and he was even working for some traditional newspapers in Brazil, such as Globo. He always had this conservative views, but with time, it's just getting more extreme. And when he came to the US, it was because he offered to work as an international correspondent for a Brazilian newspaper called Diário de São Paulo, that's now a defunct newspaper. But he came to cover the White House when he would just write for this newspaper about the US politics. And it's interesting, he said to me that he started doing that, covering the White House, and he even said that it was a dream job because he had very good income and prestigious position. But he said at that time, he felt people were not basically taking his ideas seriously. Because at that time, he was already believing in some conspiracy theories. It was the time when Obama was in power, for example, and he started spreading this idea that Obama had a false birth certificate, things like that. And Olavo was trying to convince other journalists to pursue stories like that. And he said, oh, nobody's taking me serious. These people were too boring. I don't want to be part of it. So basically, he gave up as a journalist and he decided to create his own channels to spread his own ideas. And then with the use of the internet, he started spreading these ideas. Initially, he created a website that was called Media Without Mask, and the promise that he would reveal the truth, something that the press was hiding, the real reality, the thing that nobody was talking about. And a little after, he also created a radio program on the internet that was called The True Outspeak. And with this program, he started also gaining relevance on the internet. And a particular important feature on all his channels is that he uses very aggressive language, and it helps on the internet someone to get more views and more reviews and more people talking about you, because algorithms favor this more extreme content, and particularly if you have a weird language, sexually charged language, as Olavo uses. Olavo started getting famous in Brazil, especially among young people. And that was particularly important to the way he got penetration. He helped his message really went deep down on this new generation.
Leticia mentioned that Olavo has been spreading conspiracy theories for quite some time now. I asked her about their role in shaping Olavo's worldview and whether they are influential among his followers today.
They are very important because in this far-right ideology and mind, that it's not about the facts, not about the truth. It's really about shaping reality in a way that's convenient for their ideas. And often the way to be more appealing is distorting reality and trying to blame someone and try to divide, is like us against them. So as more extreme is the idea, as more is like convenient for them. So they are really using all this fake news, fake narratives, and trying to rewrite history in a way that's more appealing for their audience. So Olavo does that a lot. Often we can say, for example, during the electoral campaign in Brazil, he was one of the main voices spreading the false idea that Nazi Germany was a leftist movement. The interesting is that it can be really crazy, but people start talking about in a way that then the media has to write reports saying that was not true. So he's basically shaping the public debate based on totally false ideas. So this is really dangerous. And you see how these ideas, they can be really extreme or crazy. How now we can see about QAnon, for example, they are based on falsehoods without any base on reality, but because many people believe it and repeat it and start talking about it on the internet, it ended up shaping the debate. And the traditional media has to write stories saying it's not true. So Olavo is a master in doing that. And we can mention some crazy examples when he said that Adorno, the Marxist philosopher Theodor Adorno, was the guy who wrote the Beatles songs, because it's also part of this conspiracy that the Beatles, in reality, according to Olavo, they are like semi-literate in music and they didn't understand anything about music, and everything was on Adorno's mind. So that was one of the conspiracy examples that Olavo was spreading. And he also says, often talks about the flat earth and other anti-scientific theories, ideas. Another example is that more recently he has talked about how the leftist leaders and global leaders, global powers, are abusing children, this idea that is also on QAnon. So he uses all these elements on a series of conspiracy theories to just try to get more followers. And it's so crazy, but in fact, these extreme ideas help with the public and keeping the debate alive.
Letícia has described Olavo as the architect of Bolsonaro's far-right vision. I asked her to tell me a bit more about the conditions that enabled the coming together of Jair Bolsonaro and Olavo de Carvalho.
So I think it would be important to say that Olavo and Bolsonaro, officially they met only after Bolsonaro's election, but the influence started much earlier, and it started with through Bolsonaro's sons. You know, Bolsonaro has three sons. They are elected members on Congress and state parliament. They have different positions. One is in Senate, another one is on the Congress House, and another one is in the City House in Rio de Janeiro. All the three of them are very powerful people too in Brazil. And they, because they are younger, they started following Olavo's channels on YouTube. And when Flávio Bolsonaro, that today he's in Senate, he was a congressman on Rio de Janeiro, he offered Olavo a medal, a state medal, for honors to the country, to the state. And he was the first one. He went to Olavo's house. It was 2012. So many years before Bolsonaro got elected, this relationship started. And basically, they saw in Olavo a way to help their ideas, because Olavo offered this intellectual underpinning for their ideology. So Olavo, he tries to portray himself as this master, his guru, his very intellectual person who understands what nobody is understanding. And because he was really popular on the internet, he was on the main guys helping to spread right-wing ideology. And this was really important. It helped Bolsonaro's case and the family. So at first, they started honoring Olavo as this guru, as someone people should pay attention on. And when Bolsonaro became popular, Olavo was already a more famous person on the internet. So he was helping with the campaign. He was helping, not in official ways as part of the campaign, but like mobilizing people to support Bolsonaro. And we have two moments when Bolsonaro honored Olavo after the election. The first one was during his first public speech as the president-elected. He had a book of Olavo on his table. And Bolsonaro had selected four books that they are very important to convey a message on some influences of his government. So he had the Bible, the Constitution, a book from like Winston Churchill, and a book of Olavo that was called The Minimum You Need to Know to Not Be an Idiot. So at that moment, Bolsonaro was saying, oh, these are the figures that are inspiring me, the great leaders inspiring my government. A few months later, when he came to the United States to his first travel as president-elected, before meeting Trump, Bolsonaro had a dinner at the Brazilian embassy house at this very important and prestigious dinner. Bolsonaro made a toast and he said, I want to honor the man at my right, that was Olavo. And he was saying, we own him, the revolution we are living. He was saying Olavo was the main responsible for all this revival of the new right in Brazil, and he was honoring officially him. Another person who was there was Bannon. Stevie Bannon was on Bolsonaro's left and Olavo was on Bolsonaro's right. So we can see how serious Bolsonaro is taking Olavo. And also Bolsonaro took at least two indications, two suggestions of Olavo to names to his cabinet. So Olavo was the person who appointed basically two ministers to Bolsonaro. One was the Minister of Education and another one's the Minister of Foreign Affairs. So Olavo is not officially a part of the government, but he's maybe the most influential person in the government from the outside.
Olavo's influence on Bolsonaro's government is well known, and Leticia even mentioned his role in appointing members of the government. Some of his best-known disciples are Felipe Martins, foreign policy advisor to the president, and Ernesto Araújo, former Minister of Foreign Affairs. I asked Leticia about the ways in which Olavo's ideas are being translated into policies or shape the Brazilian government's ideological orientation.
So as I mentioned before, Olavo is really obsessed with this idea of the culture war. And anytime when he explains why it is so important, he says the left dominates the media and the universities. So the main strategy, according to him, in order to the right to be able to win this war in Brazil is basically attacking and destroying the media and the universities. So this is basically what Bolsonaro's government is doing. And like we can see clearly in this initial 2 years of his government, how Bolsonaro has tried to attack not just the reputation, but also with cutting fundings from the universities, from the media. He's talking every day on social media. He's trying to blame the media for all the, even the pandemic and everything, portraying the media as the enemy. And also in education, they are trying to say all universities are super messy. They are centers where teachers are basically teaching students how to be gay or how to use drugs. So they try to say that the universities, they don't deserve respect. One of the first public policies on education in Brazil from Bolsonaro's government was announcing that they would cut 30% of the funding of universities. The government were not supposed to interfere in how the federal universities are managed because they have autonomy, but because they had a participation on maintenance funding, basically they did what they could to try to cut the funding of education. And there's this open campaign against the universities. Another part of it is also attacking human rights and the environmental laws, because they are saying all human rights activists, they are criminals. So they try to blame the NGOs for all the problems in Brazil, and they try to basically politicize all the public discussion, and they try to blame the others as the enemy, criminals or leftists or communists. Amazon, for example, was a big battle, became even an international issue when Europe was saying we are not offering funding anymore for Brazil because Brazil is not protecting the environment anymore. And Bolsonaro is openly against these environmental laws. And you are seeing like in the daily basis how dangerous is this ideology.
Bolsonaro is famously cheered by his supporters as mito, a myth. And Olavo, on the other hand, is known as Bolsonarismo's guru, as encapsulated in the maxim, Olavo tem razão, Olavo is right. I ask Leticia, where do these public figures overlap, and where do they diverge in the eyes of many Olavetes and Bolsonaristas?
We could say that they both have a common enemy. Both of them, they want to destroy the left, and that's the main thing that put them together, because they have this common cause. They want to destroy the left, and they are appealing to those conservative values and God and family and very conservative views on politics. But they have different visions often on how to do that. Bolsonaro, he's a former army captain, so he has all this ideas about the use the force and violence and connecting to the military. He doesn't care really much about ideology. He's tried to impose the order. He's really conservative. He's not someone reading theories or trying to make sense of his views. He's more a guy of action. And Olavo, on the other hand, he's a more in the theoretical side. He cares about the ideas, ideologies. Olavo is who's trying to make sense often of Bolsonaro's actions. So Olavo offers, as I said, the intellectual underpinning for this sometimes random policies or views that Bolsonaro is trying to operate on a daily basis. And often there's some tension also because Bolsonaro, as the present elected, he has to manage the power. And he suffers a lot of pressure for different sectors of society and the military and the economy. And just to, as a context, we can say Bolsonaro is in power for almost 30 years in the Congress. So in the House of Representatives, for almost 30 years, he was seen as someone extreme, radical, on the fringe. But since he got now in power, he has to negotiate at least with the Congress because he doesn't have majority to approve his projects. So now he's getting closer to what we call the Centrão, that's moderated, and Bolsonaro is trying to play the game just to stay in power. And Olavo is against it. He says Bolsonaro is just being weak, instead of just going more extreme with the ideology. So some media in Brazil even call the Olavo more ideologist and Bolsonaro is more practical. I don't think that's really correct, because both of them, they have this basically at the base the same ideology. But Olavo, he doesn't care about the daily basis politics. He cares about the bigger project. And he thinks Bolsonaro should be more extreme and not trying to do these negotiations and just going more with the roots of this project they share.
The so-called Centrão is a large, self-serving cluster of right and center-right parties in the Brazilian Congress, known for lending support to any incumbent government, independently of its political orientation, in exchange for strategic positions and financial gains.
Something interesting also is that when you think about what they share, is that it's much more about being against, trying to destroy the left, than trying to build something. If you analyze what Bolsonaro's government is suggesting or what's their ideas, the project to the country, it's really hard to find, because even when Bolsonaro made this first speech, when he honored Olavo here in the United States, he said, I'm toasting Olavo, I honor to him this revolution, and we don't want to build good things for our country and our people. We have to destroy things first. This is, I think, in a nutshell, what Bolsonaro's government is and what Olavo represents, because Olavo said to me when I interviewed him at his house, he said, I don't have a project. I don't have a plan for Brazil. I know what I'm against. I don't know what I'm for. It's really sad when you think about Brazil and what's happening. The project basically is the destruction of the country. It's not to build something. It's to destroy the left, it's to destroy human rights, it's to destroy the environment and what's left.
Leticia says that both Bolsonaro and Olavo are public figures, but in different ways. Bolsonaro has a long political trajectory, mostly as a rank-and-file politician, and on the other hand, Olavo has an active presence in the media world, transitioning from the traditional to online media. But how did these people gain momentum? What factors contributed to shifting popular perceptions about them? In other words, how did Olavo and Bolsonaro move from the fringe to Brazil's mainstream?
Just a little context, the left was in power for 13 years in Brazil. So we had 2.5 terms when the left was governing, and at the beginning was a big hope, and Lula was the president, and people thought he would be different from the other governments. And actually the left got some very important achievements with social policies, reducing poverty and hunger. But the government was rocked by a major corruption scandal, and it had a very important impact in the country. So at the end, everyone was so upset and frustrated with the left that it favored other alternatives. And Bolsonaro, in his campaign, he presented himself as the tough guy who would save Brazil and put Brazil back to the trails with law and order and a very conservative ideology. So many people who were just so upset and so frustrated after 13 years of the left in power turned to just to go with Bolsonaro and believed him. Operation Car Wash was a big, massive investigation on corruption. And it's important to say, so more than 200 leaders and businessmen, they got arrested. We had also other parties involved in the investigation. And it's not just about the left, but all the narrative was shaped in a way that the left ultimately was the more corrupted or responsible. And this really offered a lot of support to Bolsonaro because this narrative actually won.
Leticia argued that the government's plan is to distract. Different analysts, perhaps most notably Harvard political scientists Steven Levitsky and Daniel Ziblatt, have seen the surge of authoritarian leaders around the world following a pattern. First, their rise to power via democratic elections and then slowly undermining democratic institutions from within. Frequently cited examples are Viktor Orbán in Hungary and Recep Tayyip Erdogan in Turkey. For many, Bolsonaro is willing to, or has already set forth, a similar plan of democratic erosion. I ask Leticia if she agrees with this assessment and whether she thinks it coincides with the Brazilian government's actions so far.
The most concerning and threatening thing about this government is that we never know when or how it will end, because Bolsonaro's threatening is attacking the institutions, undermining democracy. Every day he's tweeting against the Supreme Court since Trump lost the election, and Trump was trying to say the electoral process was not fair. Bolsonaro is already using his copying the same strategy and say, well, Brazilians' elections are not safe too, and in next elections, if you don't change the system, we cannot trust the process. So it seems he's already saying that people could not trust the system. Recently, he said, I'm the president, but I cannot do anything. And what he was implying is that the institutions are not allowing him to do what he wants to do. And this is really concerning since he has the military with him, and this government has more military in cabinets than during the military dictatorship. Some people try to say, well, but it's just like a speech, it's not for real. But we are seeing, like in other countries, how this speech is not just a speech, it's really an attempt to destroy democracy and undermine institutions from inside. So I don't consider that Brazil has a fully democracy right now. I would say like bolsocracy, because Bolsonaro is really challenging the law every day and testing the limits. Some followers and supporters, they are really fanatic and they go with Bolsonaro. Doesn't matter what he says or he does. now with Trump, we had similar movement here in the US that 29% of the people, even after the Capitol invasion, they still support Trump. So we don't know how far he could go. And our institutions are more fragile every day.
My final question to Letícia was about the idea of Bolsonaro becoming more moderate in office. Just before the 2018 presidential elections, the current Minister of the Economy, Paulo Guedes, had confidently dismissed worries about Bolsonaro's authoritarian tendencies, declaring that he would be able to tame him. And while one of Bolsonaro's electoral promises was to end the old politics of give and take, just over a year in office and threatened by the possibility of an impeachment process, he quickly resorted to the backroom deals he vehemently denounced during his campaign. Bolsonaro's alignment with members of the Centrão are seen by some as the president conforming to the establishment and hence being limited by it. I asked Letícia to tell me how she sees these negotiations and whether they can tame Bolsonaro's authoritarianism.
I believe this is the main tension inside the government right now. What's the correct way to go? Because Bolsonaro knows if he tries too hard, the Congress, they have the power to remove him from power. So now in Brazil, people are talking about impeachment. Is really in the middle of his term. So if he tries too hard, he can just be pulled out of the government. So the opposition would take power, or the vice president, he's a guy from the military, he could take power. So there is this concern, and part of why Bolsonaro is trying to negotiate with other powers, because in Brazil, the president, he doesn't have a lot of powers. He needs to work with the Congress, and we don't have strong parties in Brazil. We have more than 30 parties. So all the system is made in a way that you have to make these concessions in order to govern. But on the other hand, we have Olavo and people who doesn't care about the daily politics, and they are pressuring Bolsonaro also to keep going with his ideas, because now is the only opportunity they have to really implement this crazy or extreme ideas as he had promised during the campaign. So we don't know. I think it's still too early to know how these tensions will play at the end. Right now, everything is moving. Some things that people believed that would happen, they don't happen yet. For example, many people, analysts and also media analysts, are saying, well, Bolsonaro is too extreme, but when he got to power, he just have to learn how to play the game. But we are seeing Bolsonaro is still the same. He keeps his tone as if he was in campaigns. I hope the Brazilian institutions can be strong enough to resist, and that the system can be fair. But at the same time, you are seeing how Bolsonaro is trying also to facilitate the access to have guns. And that's a new phenomenon in Brazil, because we had always a strong gun control. And now Bolsonaro is saying, oh, I want people to have guns. And he's implying that people should take guns and fight for him or for what they believe that's right. So it can be really dangerous if people really go for it. And we know some, at least 30% of the population are with Bolsonaro. So if they really listen to the president, it can be devastating. And right now, Bolsonaro is still downplaying the pandemic. He's pretending he doesn't have anything to do with that. He's trying to blame the governors. He's making an anti-vaccination campaign. And meantime, people are dying. So these policies are killing people. And if you look at the approval rates of the president, they didn't drop. So what needs to happen more? I don't have the answer yet.
This was Impact Diálogos. In this episode, I spoke with Letícia Duarte on Bolsonarismo's guru, Olavo de Carvalho. Impact Dialogus is an original production that is part of the ERC-funded PACT, Populism and Conspiracy Theory Project at the University of Tübingen, Germany. It is written, produced and hosted by me, Katerina Hadzikidi. Sound design and mixing by Ignacio Albornoz Farinha. Special thanks to Steffi da Silva, Yul Ko and Michael Buter. Thank you for listening. See you next time.